Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to tonight's show. I'm Stephen. I've got a couple of announcements to make. My co-host, Liara, who she and I have interacted for, going on 10 years, has decided to go in different directions, and wish her the best. We've had many good conversations on the show, and it has been and always will be a pleasure to have known and worked with this lady. She has shows that she's going to start doing in Australia, which is where she lives, and the time frame is more convenient for her. And also, we run into collisions with her children and the activities of their schools. So I wish Liara the best, and I ask every listener out there that's followed us for all the years that we've done this to also wish her the best, and I'm sure that she will do well. Next thing I'd like to do is just say tonight's show is going to be about karma, and if you want to know more about it after the show, I have a great book out there, and Know What Tomorrow Brings, and it talks about all 12 principles of karma, how they operate, what they do, and how they can affect life. The next thing is my book on a metaphysical interpretation of the Bible. No, it's not about religion. It's not about religious dogma. It's simply about the truth, the hidden truth, what the meaning of the Bible actually is. And it's the truth of the human. So I'd like to give a shout out to Liara, to Len in Mississippi, to Jay in the Philippines, and to Tina in Singapore. So tonight's show is going to begin with Stephen. I do have a guest online, and we were having an intriguing conversation before we went live, so I'm going to bring her on. And the shows are going to be basically conversations with me. Stephen, after having spent so many years as a monk in northern India, I have many, many, many different views of life and operations of life. You know, it's been said by me many times that knowing and understanding karma and how it operates is extremely, extremely powerful, very empowering knowledge. If for no other reason, if we look at the idea of creation taught by the religions, which most of you that's listened to me for a while know where I stand on that. The idea of creation, the creator is divine cause, and we were its effect. So in creation and the story of creation, it uses karma, the idea of karma, that created us, the human. And that's huge, because in that, in the Bible it says, according to the idea of God, I think Genesis 3:16, I could be off on that. It says, supposedly, God said, now you are just like me, that you have dominion over all things. Wow. So if the Creator was cause and we were its effect, then that now means we are cause, and our life, our experiences, and ourselves are our effect. In other words, we've created ourselves. We've not only created ourselves, but we create everything, absolutely everything in life that we go through. Most people would want to challenge that, but I have news for you. Everything that you run into is because of you, because of the idea of divine cause. Even the eighth principle of karma says, well, it's basically the law of personal responsibility. That's where we have to acknowledge ourselves and our own actions. And most of us won't do that. It's so much easier to blame life, to blame other people. And that's baloney. Because you know what? The second principle of karma tells us that you attract to you what you are, not necessarily what it is that you want. So you see, if you look at those first two ideas, they are infallible. They are universal truths. You create your experience. It's just you or me or whomever. We don't want to own it. We don't want to acknowledge that, ew, gosh, we actually did that. Yes, you did. You know, we hear in the law of, I don't want to say it, magnetic dynamics, that like attracts like. That's also the idea of karma. Even Newton's third law of motion says for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So for everything you do, whether you think it, whether you feel it, or whether it's a physical act, that's cause. It sets things in motion. It creates a ripple effect. And with that, there's going to come a return. Something is going to come back to you based on everything you think, say, feel, and do. Something, always, 100% of the time, is going to come to you. And you know, if you think about that for a moment, you can be afraid of that. It's like, oh, whoa, my. Or you can think, whoa, really? If that's true, that's a lot of power. Because it is. It's very powerful. But not until we learn to use it. Not until we learn to use it. And it's up to us to learn to recognize its use. It's up to us to learn to recognize that we are very, very, very empowered people. And we can be empowered only when we recognize what we influence, what our ability actually is, and how we as individuals can create such experiences, horrendous or otherwise. Experience is return action. Cause is you. It's I. Cause is something to always look at. What do you cause in your life? I do have a caller, and I'm going to bring her on.
Yeah.
Are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
And again, forgive me, and your first name was?
Lisa.
Lisa, that's it. Lisa, what's being shared on the air right now? I would like your kind of philosophic input. Is it making sense to you?
Oh, yes, it does, yeah. You know, I don't understand it all, but, you know, just the basic premise, what you do is going to come back to you. So if you do good things, you know, it might not be immediate, but probably good's going to come out of it. And then if you do bad things, you know, it will come back to you, you know, like in different ways. It could be down the line. You could have a car accident or something bad happens. If you cheated somebody, you know, maybe you don't pay for it then, but maybe down the line you will. And it goes for other people too if they do those things to you.
I can make you a promise, Lisa, that down the line is where karma always shows up. And the interesting thing about karma is you never know when that is actually going to take place. Sometimes the return action is immediate. And other times it can take months, weeks, months, years.
Yeah.
And even lifetimes. And I really mean that. To give someone an example of lifetimes, and that's, you know, whether people believe in reincarnation or not, to myself, is not important. Because I know that, life is eternal. So that means that reincarnation is an aspect of it. So if reincarnation is an aspect of it, then that has a huge, huge meaning. Christ himself made the statement of this, that whatever you mette, or whatever you put forth, is laid up for you in heaven. But he also said that about the location of heaven was this, when asked, that you look here and you look there for the kingdom of heaven, yet you do not look within you. All right, let's look at that statement based on karma. That would now mean that what you do in any lifetime, you store inside of you. It's your genetic code. It's your genetic makeup. It's your book of life. It's who you are. And when we do actions and activities in life, we remember it. Our soul remembers it. In fact, I'm going to really step out there for a moment, and I'm going to say this, that when we transition, when we leave this world, the first thing that happens is this. We all go through a life review from the last event, your transition, to the first event, your birth. And we take a look at that. And then basically we could say the Creator says, so what do you think? And then that's where you're going to own all your karmic debt. And that's what all these ancient masters have meant, that heaven is within you and what we do here is laid up for us, or stored, if you will, there. And then in the following lifetime, let's do something extreme. Let's say you intentionally created the loss of eyesight for another person. In other words, you made them blind intentionally. Okay? The next lifetime, I can make you a promise, an absolute promise, and that's that you will be born sighted, and you will live a lot of your life sighted, and then there's going to become a seeming accident which creates your blindness. How does that happen? Simple. Because you took the other person's sight intentionally. And anybody that thinks they get away with anything in life, I have news for you. No, you don't. No one gets away from anything. How can anyone escape themselves? They can't. Lisa, am I making sense for you?
Yes.
Any questions so far on what's being shared?
No.
Okay, so you're with me.
I am. I'm trying to understand it, but I don't know so much about, like, when you transition. Like, both my parents passed away, so are you saying that they're, like, going over their lives? Like, they just passed away recently? So they're, like, going over their lives, like, and they're trying to, like, do they see each other up in heaven or something like that?
Well, no, actually, great questions. When I use the term transition, it's like I don't believe in death. Death is so final. So when I use the word transition, it means somebody has left this reality and moved into a different reality. So when they transition, now when we do transition, that the soul doesn't rehash things, so to speak, Lisa. What it does is that review may take a few hours, a few moments. It just depends on the person's life. But it's going to take a span of time as we relate to it. And all they're going to do is take a look into the idea of, were they a loving, great, kind, giving person, or were they selfish, self-centered? Were they brutal, mean, kind, you know, whatever? And all of those things which we may pass off in this reality. You take an example of someone. Let's say a person that is extremely angry all the time. And they tend to take that anger out on other people. But they go through life and they never acknowledge it. They never recognize it. They just simply don't know that it's there. Now, I'm sure on the surface that sounds kind of absurd, right? How can one not know that they're angry, right? Lisa, you there?
Yeah.
Okay. How can one not know that they are angry?
I don't know. Trying to be loving, I guess. I don't know.
Well, but if they're angry, then the root cause is anger. And for them to be loving would be very difficult for them to do. Why? Because of the anger, the root cause. Then when we look at the idea of karma, when we go through those eyes, they're laying up very interesting karma for themselves, in the sense that karma is not, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say this right now, karma is not about punishment. No, a lot of people think it is punishment only. No, it's not. We jokingly refer to karma in this country as what goes around comes around. I'm here to say point blank to people, it's not a joke, and what goes around comes around is true, and we can take it lightly, but what you put out is very well worth looking at. If you put something out there that has seeds of selfishness in it, you put something out there that's going to manipulate a person to do something your way, and you get your way, I can promise you, you are going to be manipulated. You are going to be used. And the more you use people, the more life is going to use you, because nobody actually escapes anything. No one. Nobody can tell me that a thief, before it steals, doesn't have a conscience. And that conscience is going to say, don't do this. And they do it anyway. There's where karma really, really comes into play. Because the soul said, don't do it. And the being, the human, the flesh and blood, decided to do it anyway. Well, okay. Now that person at some point is going to have to put up. Like the old idea of put up or shut up. At some point, that person is going to become challenged, extremely challenged in their life. And I can also promise that anybody that steals is absolutely going to be stolen from. That's the rule. That's karma. That's not a law. No humans decide. Only the living entity can decide. The person that does what they do. One can do good in their life and create amazing things. One can do not so positive in their life and create interesting things. Point is, we all have a choice. Caller 780, where are you calling from and do you have a question?
No, I'm just listening to your program and talk to you. How long?
Okay.
Time.
Is this Jay?
Yes, it is.
Well, hello, sir. I thought I recognized the voice. How have you been?
Oh, I've been busy doing my yoga stuff for the last 7 months. 7 months coming up.
Well, you have any comments so far on the show? If not, we can certainly put you back on hold, and you're always welcome to contribute.
My question regarding karma from a Eastern philosophy. You just touched upon it. But where did actually the word come from? And how come also when we have karma, as you say, seems like an act of punishment, but not really truly what it is, the cause and effect and how we are in relationship with this world. I just wondered, or with ourselves too, I just wondered, how did it get distorted in the Western world?
Well, you take yoga. And nothing intended, but there's so many different styles of yoga, and I'm just going to give everybody an analogy here in answer to Jay's question. There's a thing in this country called Bikram yoga, and in the Western Hemisphere, and that idea is just fine. But Bikram yoga is not yoga. I can make an absolute promise to everybody listening to this show that if a yogini or a yoga master from India came to this country and saw that, they would be, well, they'd probably want to go throw up, because it's taking a tradition, a sequence of ideas, concepts, to instill the awakening of the divine human in a person. And something like Bikram yoga is not going to do that. It's being changed to a physical concept. In fact, my lovely bride, being a yoga instructor, was listening to a thing the other morning that was talking about what I humorously refer to as yoga size, which is like jazzercise. Mm-hmm. People are taking yoga for physical reasons. not for the original intent of the idea. You with me so far, Jay?
Yeah.
Are you with me so far?
Yes, I am.
All right. Using that as the analogy, now let's take the idea of karma. We've done the same thing. Karma originated out of the Vedic text of, excuse me, of India over, well over 5,000 years. Actually, it probably predates that. But when it was conceptualized in the Vedic text. And what happened is they realized in ancient times that there was an event, and the event caused other events. When you create an event or a domino effect, most people do not want to acknowledge that they were the creators of that domino effect. We can affect people through that very same thing. Here's a perfect example of that for all the listeners. We hear something from a person, and then we decide to tell others. And as we tell others, we begin to change or shape what the original concept was or what the original statement was. And through that act, we are creating an illusion and or a delusion. And through that act, our own lives have the propensity to become illusional. That's not to say they're not. My point being is one act creates another, and one act is only there to make sure that what you do remains equal to the viability of, hear me on this one, the viability of all of life. Here's a perfect example in another fashion of karma in action. If any of the listeners on this show are in conflict with what's going on in the Middle East, karmically speaking, you do not realize that what you're doing is the very same thing than what the people in the Middle East themselves are doing. Why? They're in conflict. Okay, so you step into conflict inside you because of that conflict. That means you are now contributing to the idea of conflict. Lisa, does that one make sense? Well, maybe she went to sleep. Jay, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, makes I can sense. See her number still there, so a lot of people don't realize I'm going to ask him something, and that's fine. You see, karma, as shared in the very beginning stages of the show, is never about punishment. It never. It's always only about things remaining on a level playing field that you, nor I, nor anyone ever is going to get away with anything, even though we like to think that we do. You would think that criminals would recognize that by now. I mean, if we look at the history of law and crime, criminals, I would say better than 85% of the time get caught. Well, if all I've got's a 15% chance of getting away with it, then excuse me, I'm not going to go there. I don't need to go there. Why? Because I'm going to get caught. And if people would stop and think about it, even in, let's go into everyday life and living to an extent. Somebody has an affair. We all know that ultimately the person that had the affair is going to be found out. Ultimately, that's going to happen. Right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So any listener out there, you're going to go out and you're tempted and you're going to have an affair and you do it. Your own guilt is going to tell your spouse that you had an affair. And that's how they're going to know it. That's karma. But that karma, when it comes to an affair, is much more far-reaching than most people would ever even really want to consider. And here's how far-reaching that would be. you have an affair. That now means that you, as the person that perpetrated the affair, are going to have great difficulty in ever trusting in another relationship with anybody else. Why? Because you're always going to be suspect that they're having an affair. Not only that, you're going to be faced always with the idea of truth, that not facing truth. So the question is always going to become to you, is this a lie or is this truth? So you see, it's much more far-reaching than anybody would ever, ever like to consider. And I hope people stop and think about that for a second. Caller from the area code 619, what's your first name, and do you have a question, or are you just listening?
Yeah, I'm just listening. This is Donna.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a question? Do you have a question so far?
I'm just listening to see, your take on it and how it works exactly.
Okay. How's it going for you so far?
Oh, pretty good. I mean, I had to learn the hard way, when I was younger about karma.
Well, but at least you paid
attention.
Right. And by the way, the Dalai Lama says that life comes in two phases. The first phase is that one of the phases is going to be that it's going to be a struggle and difficult, and the other phase is it's going to be peaceful. So at least it sounds like to me that you were brilliant. You got the struggle part out in the early phases.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to learn the hard way, and that's what I did. That's fine.
But you know what? Whoever learns anything, when it's happy and peaceful and easy?
Yeah, well, I like to tell my daughter, I like to explain to her exactly how it all works. I guess my parents' generation, it was a different time, so they just assumed everybody was going to tell the truth, and they just didn't really know just how it all works, the energy of it, and I just think it's a lot better with the newer generation because we're able to, there's more information out there as far as, exactly how it all works. So,
absolutely. The other funny thing is truth is always going to show itself, and I want everybody to hear that. Truth is always going to show itself. And whatever you're doing, there's in Buddhist philosophy, on the idea of suffering, and this is kind of seemingly off the subject, but not really. They say that there's two types of suffering. The first type is that you are going through something which you would rather avoid or run from. And when you do that, that means it's going to follow you no matter where you go, no matter what you're doing. Whatever it is, it's always going to be there. The second type of suffering is this, that you're going through something and you decide to turn and face it and deal with it. And when you decide to face it, you're setting your own self free. And the same is true with karma, because we all create things. So the first
I found it interesting. Even just having judgments about something or someone, there's a karma that goes with it. That's where I had to learn. I was very judgmental of my sister and what she was doing in her life. Always putting her down and telling her how wrong she was. And there, in fact, years down the road, I end up doing the very same thing.
There's karma for you. Yeah, there's karma for you. You were telling her. Yeah, you were telling her she was doing it, and she. Here you are.
Knock me down if you say.
Absolutely. But the brilliant part about you, lovely one, is the fact that you recognized it and you went, "Oh wow, okay, I can do things differently."
Right. So it made me a better person, for sure.
Yes, it did. Which now goes back to what was suggested to you a few minutes ago, in the sense that, hey, we can go through life ignoring what we do and denying what we do and have everything continue. Or we can go through life going, oh, I just stuck my finger in the candle. And that hurt, so I'm not going to do that again. And then you have the person that sticks their finger in the candle and they go, what's that?
Right. Yeah.
And they do it again.
Yeah. Whatever you put out there, that's what you get back.
Cause and effect. In fact, the first principle of karma, the very first principle says this: what you sow, so shall you reap. Now, Jesus didn't say that. That's not a religious concept. That's just known as the great law. And that means for everything you think, everything you feel, and everything you do, plant the seed. And it depends on what you do after that.
Yeah, it's true. Thanks very
Thank
much
you so
for sharing your wisdom.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Caller. In a minute, I guess. We're waiting for him to come up. And I hope the rest of you in the meantime can still hear me. But it's obvious that everybody's kind of enjoying the subject that we're talking about. And I appreciate you guys being here and being with us. Karma is a very intriguing thing. You know, when I was in the monasteries of northern India, it took quite a while for me to get the concepts of karma down in my life. In the book that I've written, Know What Tomorrow Brings, it's really a book that outlays all 12 principles, and there are 12 principles of karma. And when you see how they operate in what we call life. And they're in every phase, every aspect, no matter how deep within us things may go. Karma is always there. No one can ever escape karma. No one is above the natural law of life. That natural law of life is known as karma. Karma is a return action. Geez, you know, people treat it as something light and humorous in this part of the world, Jay, going back to a question that you asked. How did it get changed? We just don't take it sincerely. And as you know, my friend, I don't take anything seriously. But I do take everything sincerely. Because, you see, there is only cause. Even if what helps an airplane fly? Karma. It's not the wind beneath the wings that lifts the airplane. And most people don't know that. It's the air current above the wing that does it. That's karma. That causes the lift. The operation of a ship in the ocean is based on karma. The boat knowing what the current's going to do, or the captain, and the boat interacting with it, is creating the direction in which the ship is choosing to go. Well, even a bird in flight operates in flight by karma. Maybe the day that we learn to understand karma is the day we re-understand how to fly. Mm-hmm. That would be trippy. And it's not outside the realm of possibilities. It's learning to understand the true power that we wield in life, and the true power that we wield in life other than ourselves is through the proper utilization of karma. The first principle I shared earlier is what you sow, so shall you reap. That's based on what you think, what you feel, and whatever act you perpetrate. Those three things. The second principle of karma says that you attract to you what you are, not what you want. You take a person that lives in insecurity within themselves. You're still generating karma, whether you believe it or not. You are. And in that interaction with you sending out your own insecurities, you're going to be attracting people to you that are going to magnify your insecurities. Now, wait a minute. Does that make sense? On the surface, one could say, no, that doesn't. You would think, through the love and grace of the universe, they would go the opposite way. No, they don't. The reason? That's actually simple. Everything that you generate is a request to give you an experience. Everything you generate is a request to give to you an experience. Now, who likes to be rejected? Nobody. But to overcome your rejection, the object of the universe is to throw people into your path because you're afraid of it. They're going to do that, so you go, oh, wait, I get it. I finally get it. It's not about what other people think. It's about what I think. And then rejection stops. Does that make sense, Jay?
Yes. Sounds like what you were talking about is what I'm learning now with the emotional mandala. And that's about the emotional mandala that I'm learning.
Yep.
And what you're talking about. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a form
of
state where, yes, and that's really, really intriguing, actually, how our thoughts or I thoughts come from a formless state and expressed as a form, you know, the different elements that are in that mandala, which are liberated aspects and obstructions. And what's really interesting about is what you're talking about is that is having that awareness before that thought or whatever or that formless state becomes a form and comes before I thought and then the emotion of it. So and that's where you can feel that you can actually stop the karma too. Is that
yes,
or it's
can.
Like hold it.
Well,
am I going to be annihilated or something like that? Or that's what I'm always like okay, no, okay, I'm not gonna be annihilated, so gee, just you know, don't. What's the use of, you know, just let it go, I guess, if you want to call it that.
All right, I want to share something. Stopping karma is not going to happen.
No, I'm just saying
no
stop, not stopping karma. I'm saying is that the cause and effect you're talking about from the Vedic thing is that we, if you have an awareness before that thing becomes an obstruction that what do you call that thought or I don't know the obstruction before it comes into a form.
But every thought comes into form, and I'll get to that in a second. But you suggested something very deep and very meaningful to me when you use the phrase "I thought."
Yeah.
The I form, the I idea. That whole thing that you're suggesting right there is a lot bigger than what most people ever even want to consider.
That's
because
right.
The moment one steps into I thought and I thinking, you're creating division and separation, which is now comes down to the idea of lack of ownership of self in that idea of I thinking. And I thinking also stimulates what we refer to as the egocentric concept, which ego to me is a teacher of sorts.
Well, how can it be a teacher if it's not based in reality, though, according to Buddhism?
Okay. Awesome question there, my friend. What's not based in reality in that? The I concept is based in three dimensions. That's what we consider as the idea of reality. Now, step into something else. Buddha said that life is an illusion. He didn't say that life wasn't real. What he said was that it was real, but how the mind perceives and overlays into material reality is the very thing that creates the illusion. Does that make sense?
That's true, because even elders even talk about the dreaming state as our actually waking state, because
yes.
We're not in that form creating whatever, that
yes.
Illusion of reality. You mean,
right.
Even as if I'm talking to you, I can say,
right.
Well, whatever, and you can say the same thing about me, or and say two different stories are there, right? It's like, you know,
certainly.
People watching an accident. You're not going to get like one story. You can get many stories. So,
That's because what you have is a lot of observers. What you have is a lot of participants, and all of those are fine. But let's move away from the idea of accidents and let's talk about the idea of life and living, and the idea of karma that's involved in that. Ladies and gentlemen, hey, karma is a wonderful tool. If it's used as a tool and to be understood that, one, if you're going to use it effectively, then step out of the realm of illusion. Just step out of it. Illusion, what does that actually mean? Here's the essence without going through the depth of it. You can go through something that you like, you enjoy it, so therefore to you, it's not an illusion. Then you go through something that you don't like, that you're struggling with, that's extremely difficult, and you are fighting it. There's the illusion. Because it's only the human that has the opportunity and the ability to do that. Who out there can actually convince me and tell me that a squirrel, bird, or rabbit is struggling in life? I would say to you, not happening. They're living life. They aren't working at it. They're living. They're being in life. They're one with it. So to them, there's no struggle. It's only the human that has the art of moving themselves away from natural life. You don't believe that? Excuse me a second. Take a look at reality. We have a round earth, yet at times we refer to it as the four corners of the earth. We live in a natural world which has weather tendencies, and we live in square homes. Not very Mother Nature friendly, yet we blame Mother Nature. And these are simple things. These are just
Something. They had somebody else on that here in static.
Right. These are just simple ideas that are very real, that move us away from the natural understanding of the flow of life. And there is a flow. There is a harmonic. And what we're constantly doing as the human is we're getting in conflict with it. In other words, life is not the disturbance. The human, seemingly to me, is the disturbance because we're in disagreement with it. I mean, for goodness sakes, think about something, people, please. It's a cloudy day, rainy, and what does the media refer to it as? Gloomy. Really? How can a rainy day be gloomy when it's just clouds, moisture, which creates growth, promotes life? That's what it does. And yet, we refer to it as gloomy. Those are the illusions that Buddha talks about. Those are the things that we give power to. We give power to difficulty. And as we give power to difficulty, it creates more difficulty. And as it creates more difficulty, it's because of the illusions which we're perpetrating in the first place, which we choose not to own. Wow, that was a lot. Lisa, does all of that make sense?
Yes, I'm listening.
Oh, good. But any questions on any of that?
No.
Awesome. Good for you. I love it when there's people out there that just totally are into it and are listening and they're understanding and are willing to expand with the idea of karma. Most people would rather discount karma as being unreal as opposed to recognizing a simple truth. That it is real, that it is valid. It's who we are. It's what created us. It's what gave us life, and it's what we do. Even if you, Jay, are you having dinner?
I'm here. I'm just hearing whoever's doing dishes.
I thought that was maybe you eating potato chips or something.
No, I think it's the other person you got. If you can turn your mic off, that'd be great. So it's the other person.
I'm not so sure of that because he seems to be right there at the mic, but we'll see. Anyway, so the idea of karma is actually about the power of creation, that we're always creating. No one, I don't know about the listeners out there, but no one that I know of was ever born with an eraser in their hands. What do I mean? Meaning, simply put, that no one can uncreate anything. The only thing that we can do is create. And if you're going to create, let's create with intention. As an example, would you like to see a world filled with implicit peace? If you do, don't focus on conflict. Because karma says that you're asking for conflict when what you would prefer is peace. So in the face of conflict, why not simply focus on peace? Why not be still within yourself, knowing that you're contributing more by doing that than by being in conflict? David Hawkins, in his book on Power versus Force, says that a person filled with anger can influence 10,000 people. But a person filled with consciousness and enlightenment can influence 1 million people. Frankly, I think it would be more effective if we focused on influencing 10 million people, not 10,000. That alone would say, get rid of your anger, move forward, live in peace within yourself, within you. And because of that, you influence 10 million people. Whoa. A lot of people may think that's not realistic. Well, how do you know? How's that measurable? Well, actually, it is measurable. We can go all the way back to 9/11. And I'm talking about consciousness for a moment. 9/11. The day that that happened, there are seismic monitors by American universities all over the planet, every nation, everywhere. And for a period of a half an hour on 9/11, those monitors went totally silent. And for a while, the system administrators and operators thought it was broken until it started again. And then they realized that in that moment, consciousness came to a standstill. There was no movement in consciousness whatsoever. That being true, now think about karma. Think about what's being talked about. There are instruments out there, even Newton and his third law of motion, was for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So for everything you do, think, feel, or say is a cause. And I can make you a promise. If you watch and observe, you'll see it come back to you. Now, very early in the show with Lisa, when we were talking, she was talking about time frames. You never know when karma is going to return you the favor which you extended. And I'm being a little bit facetious. It can be in this lifetime. It can be. But depending on the depth and breadth of it, it could be in another lifetime. I'm going to share a personal side of myself and my childhood and what happened. My dad was, I'm going to say, extremely intriguing. Very aggressive, very controlling, very domineering. And we lived our childhoods under a very tight rule. And interestingly enough, the way he left this world is he got Lou Gehrig's disease. So he confined and controlled 24/7 five kids and the mother. And then he ended up being confined by the loss of the use of one nerve at a time. That, to me, was karma being extended back to him in this lifetime. So, as I say, karma can go from moment to moment. You do this in this moment, this comes back to you in that moment. It could be from day to day. You did this yesterday, therefore, this is what's given you today. Let me give you an example of that. If I'm at the grocery store and I buy something, and of course I pay for it, and the person gives me change, I always count the change. And quite often, and I sincerely mean it, the person will give me back too much money. And I'll always look at the person and say, count this. do, and they find out I did them a favor. No matter what amount is given back to me that's above what it should be, I will always return it. Why? It's that simple. If you know that cashier, you know within you, they gave you too much change back, and you keep it, and you think to yourself, well, hey, that's their fault, so I'm just going to keep it. You have an event coming, and the odds are something is going to be taken from you that's going to be greater than what you got. You receive $10. The next day, your car gets run into by a hit-and-run driver. And now the repair to your car costs you $200. It's because of that one event where you didn't give or offer the appropriate thing. You didn't live in truth. And that's where I'm going. Anytime a person doesn't live in the truth of their own selves, that's where karma is going to come into play. Anytime you live a lie, karma is going to hammer you. It has to teach you the idea of truth. There's one way to live in this world, and that's in pure equality. It's not about what color you are. It's not about where you're from. It's about that we're all human, every single one of us. It's not about your belief. Your belief can create negative karma. That applies to Christians. That applies to Islam. That applies to Jewish traditions. That applies to all of those people. Because your belief system can set things in motion. Because your belief system is taking something that is not in equality. Why do I say that? Religion teaches nothing against Christianity, because in India it is stated that there are many paths to the one God and all paths are acceptable. That's wonderful. Except how people operate in it. When you look at the conflicts in the world, it's about Christianity against Islam. Come on, that's two religions coming up against each other. You got karmic consequences coming because of that. Why? Because each of you is attempting to prove one of you is better than the other. Well, excuse me a second. And the idea of creation, it's based in equality. That's what karma comes down to. You're equal to me. I'm equal to you. You want to downplay me? Go ahead. It's your consequence, and I'm not going to fight you back. It's your choice to see someone smaller than you. And yet, in reality, no one's smaller than anybody. It's your darned egos. And it's those belief systems that set things in motion that have karmic consequences. And I think we're seeing the karmic consequences in the globe today because of the same illusional and delusional shenanigans. All texts say that everyone was created in equality. Everything is equal to each other. And why is it so difficult for us to live in that realm? You have something more than I do, so therefore I'm going to steal from you. I have more than you do, and I'm going to make sure I stay that I have more than you do, so I'm going to take from you. All of those are karma in motion, and all of those are going to have their consequence. Somebody wrote a review on my book on karma, and what they said was, is that if half the world read that book, then the world would change. Not because I wrote the book, but because I believe that. That the way to change the world is through understanding our own activity. What we do to ourselves, and what we do to each other. Because what we do to each other is absurd. You gotta blow people up for what point? You gotta lie to people so you can get elected into office? What's your point? Because ultimately, even the people doing that are gonna get theirs based on what they do. It's inescapable. It's more important to be loving, kind, it's more important to be compassionate. It's much more important to understand that people go through difficulties in life. And we go through experience. It's much more important to know that everybody goes through a different experience than you or I do. We can go through the same things, but we're going to handle it differently. And nobody, nobody walks that smooth of a path to where they never have conflict, to where they never have difficulty. Nobody lives in that kind of a world. The world we live in is the world called life. To that, we are participants. And as participants, we are involved, we're engaged, and we are creating. We are creating what it is that we choose to create. That's what we're doing. We're not only doing that to ourselves, but we're doing it with and towards each other. There's individual karma, there's family karma, there's community karma, city, county, state, national, global. Because of what we do towards each other. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, the individual human seems to be inconsequential. And because of karma, karma's going to say, no, world, that's not true. The individual is the world. Each of you are that significant. Each of us are cells of life. Each of us are cells of consciousness. Each of us are cells of expression, divine expression, with the divine right to express. That's who we are. That's what we're about. That's what we are here to learn. Any questions, Jay, Lisa?
I feel that the wisdom is really cherished over the hour, and I feel that you know, we cannot be, if we have not practiced to have a reference or be our wisdom, who we are inside.
Well, it's a practice, Jay, and you are correct. We are living divine creation. We are created from divine substance. Into divine substance, about divine substance, and that's the essence of karma. And karma creates experience. You want to change your experience? Change what you do. Einstein once said that the greatest definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome. Can't happen because of karma. We are bound to our own karma. If there's a chain, and there's only one, that chains us in life, but it chains us to ourselves, to who you are. And all life wants to do is show you that. Once heard it said that if you are going through an inner situation that is beneath your conscience, then life will show it to you and give it to you. So that you can learn to understand it. So not only can you learn to understand it, so that you can learn to change it. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Dr. Stephen Harefield. I'm also known as an American monk because I spent time in Tibet, or actually India, as a Tibet monk. And I come from that knowledge. You can find out more about me at www.hairfield.com. And I also do private counseling and consulting on living in life. And if you'd like to get a hold of me, that's easy. My phone number is on my website. And love to work with people to help enhance their lives. Enjoyed doing the show, and I'm glad all of you folks were here. That being said, we're going to be signing off, and Jay, Lisa, and all the callers that we had, deeply appreciate you calling. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll be here next week, same time. Thank you so much.